গোপী জনবল্লভ গিরিধর ধারি যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ চন্দ্ররঞ্জন যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ চন্দ্ররঞ্জন যমুনা তীর বন চাহারি যমুন তীর বন চারি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি গোপী জনবল্লভ গিরিধর ধারি জয় গোপী জনবল্লভ গিরিধর ধারি যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ চন্দ্ররঞ্জন যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ চন্দ্ররঞ্জন যমুনা তীর বন চারি যমুন তীর বন চারি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি জয় গোপী জনবল্লভ গিরিধর ধারি গোপী জয় গোপী জনবল্লভ গিরিধর ধারি যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ চন্দ্ররঞ্জন যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ চন্দ্ররঞ্জন যমুনা তীর বন চারি যমুনা তীর বন চারি যমুনা তীর বন চারি হরে কৃষ্ণ হরে কৃষ্ণ 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 হরে 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 রাম হরে রাম 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 হরে 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 কৃষ্ণ কৃষ্ণ হরে কৃষ্ণ হরে Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivajakacharya. Ask the Torasata Sri Sri Madhis Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anatagudi Vaishnava Rinda Ki Jai. Haridas Thakura Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees, and all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Namaste, Saraswati Deva Bhagavan Pachara Visheshas. That's fine. Can't see Prabhupada with Tulsi blocking him. Thank you. That's where I get all my grace from. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mumukshavo Goro Rupan. Hitva Bhuta Patinata. Narayana Kala Shanta. Bhajanti Hyana Suyava Mumukshavo Gora Rupan Hitva Bhuta Patinata Narayana Kala Shanta Bhajanti Hyana Suyava Mumukshavo Goro Rupan Hitva Bhuta Patinata Narayana Kala Shanta Bhajanti Anasuyava. His chant. Ladies, please. Anyone else want to take a stab at it? Synonyms. Mumukshava. Persons desiring liberation. Gora. Horrible, ghastly. Rupan. Forms like that. Hitva. Rejecting. Bhutapatin. Demigods. Atha. For this reason, Narayana, the personality of Godhead, Kala, plenary portions, Shanta, all blissful, Bhajanti, do worship, he, certainly, Anasuyava, non-envious. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Those who are serious about liberation, excuse me, I didn't announce the numbers. We are in Canto 1. Chapter 2, text 26, for those of you especially following it at home, I'd like to make reference to your books. Translation. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Please repeat. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is the original person of the Vishnu categories, expands himself in two different categories, namely integrated plenary portions and separated parts and parcels. The separated parts and parcels are the servitors, like us. And the integrated plenary portions of Vishnu tattvas are the worshipful objects of service. All demigods who are empowered by the Supreme Lord are also separated parts and parcels. They do not belong to the categories of Vishnu tattva. The Vishnu tattvas are living beings equally as powerful as the original form of the personality of Godhead, and they display different categories of power in consideration of different times and circumstances. The separated parts and parcels are powerful by limitation. They do not have unlimited power like the Vishnu tattvas. Therefore, one should never classify the Vishnu tattvas or the plenary portions of Narayan, the personality of Godhead, in the same categories with the parts and parcels. In other words, they are not one, they are not equal. They're one in quality, but certainly not in quantity. If anyone does so, he becomes at once an offender by the name Pashandi. In the age of Kali, many foolish persons commit such unlawful offenses and equalize the two categories. The separated parts and parcels have different positions in the estimation of material powers. And some of them are like Kala Bhairav, Smashana Bhairav, Shani, Mahakali, and Chandika. These demigods are worshipped mostly by those who are in the lowest categories of the mode of darkness or ignorance. The demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Surya, Ganesha, and many similar deities are worshipped by men in the mode of passion, urged on by the desire for material enjoyment. But those who are actually situated in the mode of goodness, sattva guna, of material nature, worship only Vishnu tattvas. Vishnu tattvas are represented by various names and forms, such as Narayan, Damodar, Vamana, Govinda, and Adhoksaja. The qualified Brahmins worship the Vishnu tattvas represented by the Shalagram Shila. And some of the higher castes, like the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, also generally worship the Vishnu tattvas. Highly qualified Brahmins situated in the mode of goodness have no grudges against the mode of worship of others. They have all respect for other demigods, even though they may look ghastly, like Kalabhairav or Mahakali. They know very well that these horrible features of the Supreme Lord are all different servitors of the Lord under different conditions, yet they reject the worship of both horrible and attractive features of the demigods. And they concentrate only on the forms of Vishnu because they are serious about liberation from the material conditions. The demigods, even to the stage of Brahma, the supreme of all the demigods, cannot offer liberation to anyone. Hiranyakashipu underwent a severe type of penance to become eternal in life. But his worshipful deity, Brahma, could not satisfy him with such blessings. Therefore, Vishnu and none else is called Mukti Pada. Mukti is liberation, and Pada means the feet. So, as it says, therefore Vishnu and none other else is called Mukta Pada, or the personality of Godhead who can bestow upon us Mukti liberation. And this word Pada means feet. So by putting our head at the feet of Lord Vishnu, sincerely begging for his mercy, feeling that it is a great opportunity and glorious attraction, such persons can gain liberation because the Lord appreciates, especially enjoys seeing his devotees in this humble position, which allows him to pour upon them more and more of his divine gifts. The Lord does not like to pour his divine gifts upon those who are proud, conceited, snobbish, aloof, and the like. The demigods, being like other living entities in the material world, are all liquidated at the time of annihilation of the material structure. They are themselves unable to get liberation. And what to speak of giving liberation to their devotees? The demigods can award the worshippers some temporary benefit only, and not the ultimate one. It is for this reason only that candidates for liberation deliberately reject the worship of the demigods, although they have no disrespect for any one of them. Omagyana timirandasya gnanjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Could give a whole month of lectures just on this one verse. It has so much in it. The question is what to focus on so that when we all leave, we can remember some of it. Sometimes I see devotees trying to tackle within this short half hour so many different aspects of the purport that I, for one, when I walk out, I wonder what was this class about. The mind can only handle in a short period of time only a certain amount of material. And when it gets overloaded, as we know, sometimes we have an overload, computers and different devices, then what happens is that it just ceases to function and absorb and be able to utilize and explain. So I'll try to keep it limited to this main point, but there are some points that I may not cover, which are in the purport as well as the translation, which possibly in the question and answer period can deal with. For one thing, just right at the beginning, I would like to just mention, as it is said right here, that those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious in their respect all, yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods. So some of us, when I first read that, I began to ask myself, which demigods are horrible and ghastly? Because most of them are very, at least in the pictures that I've seen, are generally very good-looking men. Very attractive women, and I could not see anything ghastly in them. But then as I read on, I saw that he was talking at Mahakali, and I remembered the book that I had written called The Life of Tulsi Devi, and there was a big fight in that book between Lord Shiva and Sankarsur, demon Sankarsur. And Kali appears in that pastime to give assistance or help to her husband, Shiva. And the form that she assumes or manifests is gigantic, first of all, huge. And the second thing is that she looks truly horrible and hideous. She got skulls hanging on her neck. I mean, her adornments, she's got her mouth wide open, her tongue hanging out, her eyes bulging. It's not easy to look at if you're looking for a beautiful demigoddess. So, but she served a very useful purpose. But even to make it even more gruesome or grotesque, she came out fighting, swinging, really. And when the demons from Shankarsur tried to attack her, she would just grab five of them in her hand and put them in her mouth and start chewing them up. Yeah, and she was chewing and she was smiling too. She was really enjoying the meal. So that's one of the functions and purposes of great demigoddesses like her, although they don't look beautiful, but they do, at least from the point of view of serving the devotees, they do some beautiful things. Another example is that King Bharat was once captured. He wasn't a king at this time. He was a renunciant. And he was captured by a band of thugs, T-H-U-G-S. In our English language, it means generally criminal type of persons. in the meaning that it has here, are persons who offer in sacrifice human beings. So they're called thugs. And it is their belief that if they offer the human beings, especially the head, to goddess Kali, that they will gain certain benefits. So they were looking for a person to offer in sacrifice, and they saw Bharat, who was acting very much like almost an avadut. He just had a little dirty loincloth on. They looked at him. He had good broad shoulders and big chest, and handsome enough to offer. So they brought him to the chief priest, and the priest said yes, and they washed him up, and they put the white cloth over him. And then the priest who would do the beheading took out the cleaver, and Bharat's head was bowed. And in front there was the deity of goddess Kali. And she saw what was going on. Now, her husband is one of the greatest devotees of Lord Krishna. And Bharat Maharaj was a devotee of Lord Krishna. And therefore, when a great devotee is attacked, then those who have great power come to rescue them. So her deity form immediately came alive, so to speak. By came alive, I mean became active. It was just as alive when it was in the stationary form. But came alive in the sense that she began moving. And she jumped off the altar. And she immediately grabbed that cleaver and started cutting off the heads of all the demons, one after another. But that was not the end of the story. Her devotees or disciples, called the yoginis, they materialize. They didn't even have clothes on. And they manifested, screeching and squealing and yelling, and they picked up the heads. And they began tossing the heads back and forth to one another like people playing basketball. So they were having a really good time. That's their thing. That's how they serve the Lord. So then Bharat Maharaj, he just walked off and walked away. And that was the end of that. What I'm trying to bring out is sometimes this the word that's being used here, horrible and ghastly forms, are sometimes used in different capacities. So I just wanted to clarify that particular point. So what I'd like to talk a little more about today is the principle of liberation, because Srila Prabhupada is mentioning again and again that the only divinity, the only divine who can give liberation is Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is an incarnation of Lord Krishna, for those who may not know. And Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, they give liberation. They are super pure. And being super pure, they have the power to totally purify us so that we can be liberated. But what is liberation? I see many devotees use the word, and it's used sometimes almost in a derogatory sense or belittling sense, and also by other devotees will use it in a glorifiable sense. So how could it be both? And I will explain. First of all, let us look at the word liberation. The word liberation means to be free of some horrible or difficult or troublesome situation. For example, just on the world, the political scene, people strive for liberation from a country, like in Venezuela right now. The people want to overthrow the dictator there and obtain liberation to be free of him. That's what liberation, to be free of him and his dictatorial policies and establish a more democratic situation. We have the same thing in Syria, the same thing in Egypt. All over the world there are revolutions to overthrow both dictators and even democratic leaders. and to be liberated from their misuse of power, taking too much money for themselves, killing people who don't deserve to be killed, raising taxes to a highly exploitable degree, making life miserable for many people and comfortable for a few people. So revolution often comes. We have the French Revolution, and we have also the American Revolution against the Brits. This is always going on. So this is one kind of liberation, but that kind of liberation is not what Srila Prabhupada was talking about, because those liberations come and go. They're here today, they're gone tomorrow. We can see how many countries have had leaders who were deposed and replaced by new leaders who appeared at the outset to be very benevolent, kind, understanding, implemented policies which were to the benefit of the people. But as they went on and as they became more powerful, as people glorified and worshipped and adored them, they became slowly but surely corrupt and began to become very much like the persons whom they replaced. We see a very good example in the, anybody has written, or has read, excuse me, in high school or junior high school, the book Animal Form by George Orwell. Very fascinating account of how all the animals were being badly treated by the farmer. So all the animals got together and the pigs were in charge. So all the pigs, they said, okay, let's go get the farmer, and they just did a number on him. And who became the new leader? The pigs. So the pigs were in charge and they were very nice at the beginning. But after some time, the pigs became worse than the farmers, because power corrupts, and sometimes it corrupts absolutely. So that what happens is that a person becomes so attached to the sense or enamored of these feelings of adoration and profit, distinction, glorification, submission, that they just feel that they can do whatever they want to do, because no one can depose them, no one can dethrone them, no one can knock them down. That's the way they feel, but that is the farthest from the truth, because revolutions start just that way. So that's not the liberation that Srila Prabhupada is talking about. In fact, it is not really liberation, it is just going from the frying pan to the boiling water, or from the boiling water back to the frying pan. It's all based on the material principle. And when rajas or passion, when tamas or ignorance lead, and maybe there's a little bit of goodness, sattva, the only kind of government that you can have is a government that is not for the benefit of the people, but for the benefit of the few who rule the people. So now the liberation that Srila Prabhupada is talking about here is another kind. Liberation generally, in spiritual terms here, means to be liberated from what? To be liberated, first of all, from the law of karma. All karmic reactions gone, finished. And the person develops such characteristics and qualities and behavior that he never acts in a way in which bad karma can come to him. If anything, only good karma comes to him. Good things, beneficial things. But even if by chance Krishna has some particular pastimes to enact or particular desires to fulfill, then he may be in a situation in which there's plenty of trouble, plenty of difficulties, plenty of tribulation, like the Pandavas did. But they never get upset or disturbed or shaken by these things. They see that the hand of God is in everything that is happening to them. And they know that no sooner has it happened than eventually it will end. So the point here is that liberation from karma, liberation from guna, This is what liberation is. It's liberate to be liberated from all of the lower qualities that we tend to have: lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, madness, gluttony, or sloth, laziness. All these qualities we become liberated from, which is a good thing. So this is liberation. One is liberated, but more than that, we go to the other, to the next side, which is liberate. What replaces the misery? What replaces the enslavement? What replaces the problems? So there are five kinds of liberation that are mentioned in our scriptures that a person can attain. I would like to say at the outset that the bhakti yoga, the same philosophy that Srila Prabhupada has brought us, the devotees are not at all interested in any of these five, because there is a distinct difference. One of them is called sayujya liberation. Sayujya liberation means merging with the infinite light, or the Brahma Jyoti, the rays that come from the body of Krishna. And one enters into that, and there is no devotional service in that light. There is no form of God in that light. There is only peacefulness, maybe a joyful peacefulness, joyful in the sense of being free from the miseries before. So there is no, all one does is one just, you might say, floats on the raft. It's like putting a raft on the ocean and just lying down on it. Well, it may be very relaxing for a while. It may be very comfortable for a while. But after a while, one wants to get back to land. One wants to start doing something. And so generally he starts paddling, and he paddles back to land and takes up some activity, because it is the nature of the soul to be active. That is its nature. But people think that getting away from activity, which is causing them so much misery, will be the answer to their problem. The Bhagavatam mentions those who think they are liberated in this world, but who are devoid of devotional service to you, are of impure intelligence, although they accept severe austerities and penances and rise to the spiritual position, they fall down again because they neglect to worship your lotus feet. Why don't they want to worship the lotus feet? Because they themselves want to be God. If you want to be God, you don't want to worship anybody, because that's a denial of your own godly position. So, therefore, they don't like to worship God, but they will worship Krishna, they will worship Rama, they will worship some of the Vishnu Tattva incarnations. But for what reason? I have seen this at various temples in which impersonalism is the chief dictate. They will worship Lord Vishnu, they will worship, they even have Krishna on their altar, but for the sole purpose, the only purpose, to become so purified that they can merge and melt into the light. Not only that, but they think and they believe very firmly that they are equal to Krishna. I once heard one of the ministers, I was there, and he said, all of you are equal to Krishna, you just have not yet realized it. You just have to continue growing in your purification. He should have said corruption. But growing in your purification, and eventually you will enter into the light, and you will be one with Krishna, you'll be one with Rama, you'll be one with this particular guru. It's all one. So devotees, they reject this, because devotees actually want to develop some degree, some type of love with Krishna. So that was one form of liberation. Another is sarupya. Sarupya liberation means to take on the same form of the Lord. One looks like Vishnu, he has four arms, he wears a helmet like Vishnu, carries a club, has a Sudarshan chakra. It just looks like. So that is another form. And then there is Salokya, living on the same planet as Lord Vishnu. And then there is also Samipya, having a friendly relationship, but not an intensely friendship, a friendly relationship. Intensity is another world. And we'll get to that in a few moments. But having the same Samipya, having a friendly association. And then there's Sarshti, having the opulence of the Supreme Lord. So all of these give a person, they're all free of karma, they're free of guna, and they serve the Lord in a very nice way, as the Lord wants to be served, generally speaking, in the Vaikuntha planets. And persons who are likely to be in that category are persons who serve in the rasa of servitorship and even neutrality. In neutrality, a person worships primarily the qualities of the Lord, such as the opulences, his beauty, his wealth, his power or strength, his fame, his renunciation. They worship these powers and they glorify those powers, but they are not too much into the idea of worshiping the form of the Lord. And we see this in the 9 Yogendras. We see this in the 4 Kumaras. It was for many, many, many years before the 4 Kumaras got a chance to actually see Lord Vishnu. But they were also considered liberated. And they were liberated, and of course they were free of guna and karma and the like. So persons who are also in the servitorship mentality will also go to Vaikuntha planets. But then there are servitors who not just are in the servant mentality, but their service is filled with lots of devotional love. A very good example of this is Hanuman. He's the prime or greatest example of servitorship. And when he approaches the Lord, he doesn't go and embrace the Lord. Servants don't do that. What they do is they throw themselves at the feet of the Lord and feel that that is of greatest importance. But the Lord, for example, Lord Ramachandra, would take hold of Hanuman, especially after he came back from Lanka and he found Sita. He lifted him up and he embraced him. And Hanuman did not say, no, no, no. He didn't say like that. I'm unworthy. He just accepted, because a servant accepts what the master gives him. He doesn't try to take a willful, superior position, telling the Lord what he should do, as I sometimes see devotees do. Sometimes I try to offer something, and a person will say, no, I'm not worthy. Don't give me that. Prabhupada never did that. You gave a watch to Prabhupada, he took it. You gave him a ring, he took it. He took everything, and if it was too much, he gave it, distributed it to other devotees. He accepted that as the love of God coming through the devotee, so you don't reject it. It's accepted, but not accepted really for one's own self. You accept it on behalf of the Lord, and that way you are free of the pride, which comes from thinking, I'm so great, I'm so wonderful, I'm so glorious, that I'm getting all these wonderful gifts. How to get free of that? The only way to get free of it is you have to give it away. So we give it away to the Guru and the Lord. And we see that visually. This is why so many sannyasis, so many gurus, so many GBCs fell down. They never did this. I recently talked to one of our past gurus and sannyasis. And I mentioned this particular point I'm mentioning right now. And he had fallen down quite steeply. So he said to me, why didn't you tell me that back in the 1970s? I said, why? Because you never would have listened to me. That's why. And that's the truth. He was too proud, too puffed up. He didn't want to hear any advice from anyone. But now things have changed. So anyway, my point is this. We all have to do this. When you're praised for a good class, giving a good class, you're praised for cooking such incredible food, which turns offered to the Lord for Maha. When you're praised for making or dressing the deities, wow, what an outrage. Look at that. It's amazing. How could you not praise? Who's the devotee who did that? You're enthralled. So when we receive this praise, receive this honor, receive this celebrity, what do you do with it? You accept it graciously, but not for ourselves. We give it to Guru and God. And you see this in your head, not here, Guru, here, God, finished, end of story. It doesn't go like that. It's a love offering. My Lord, they're giving this to me, but you really deserve it. You really should get it. And either they're blinded or whatever, or they're giving it to me because they know that somehow or other, it's what I gave to them is coming from you. So I want to make it perfectly clear that this does not belong to me. This, which I am honored for or glorified for or celebrated for, is a result of your grace, a result of your kindness, a result of your sweetness, your love, your affection. And therefore, I give this to you, and I thank you for allowing me, enabling me, helping me to serve as your representative. So there's not much time left. I didn't even get into some of the other things that I wanted to, but I will simply mention the other kinds of liberation. As I said, I defined the different liberations. And those devotees, though, who are more intimately, more closely, more deeply involved in loving service to the Lord, they can be called, some of them are in the friendship rasa, some of them are in the parental rasa, and some of them are in the you might say romantic or conjugal rasa. And all of these have intimate relationships with Krishna. And the difference between those in the conjugal rasa and those in the friendship is that the intensity of love is very much greater. It is said that Srimati Radharani's love is so great that it's inconceivable, and it's so inconceivable that Krishna himself had to appear as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with all the sentiments and the feelings of Srimati Radharani so that he could actually taste it and feel it and understand it. Okay? It appears that there's not any time for questions because it's already 22 after, but I'll be glad to answer any questions after this class ends. Thank you all very much for listening. It's my pleasure and privilege to serve you. Hare Krishna.